And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, broadcasting from BBS Radio, and welcome to the show, where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Alan White is considered by many to be one of the greatest rock drummers of all time, with 40-plus years of performance experience and appearances on over 50 albums. Alan's dossier reads like a who's who of rock legends. With his consummate professionalism and easygoing nature, Alan continues to be an inspiration to fellow musicians as well as fans. In the summer of 68, Alan was asked to join Ginger Baker's Air Force, a new group being put together by the former drummer of Cream and other noted musicians from England's music scene, including Steve Winwood, formerly of Traffic. In 1969, Alan received what he thought at the time to be a prank phone call, but was actually John Lennon calling to ask Alan to join the Plastic Ono Band. The next day, Alan found himself learning songs in the back of an airliner en route to Toronto with Lennon, Yoko Ono, Eric Clapton, and Klaus Voormann. The ensuing album, Live Peace in Toronto, sold millions of copies, peaking at number 10 on the pop charts. Alan's association with Lennon continued, recording singles like Instant Karma and the subsequent landmark album, Imagine, with Alan providing drums for the title song, Jealous Guy and How Do You Sleep at Night. Alan's work with Lennon led to an introduction to George Harrison, who asked Alan to perform on the album All Things Must Pass, including the hit single My Sweet Lord, released in 1970. 1972, while on tour with Joe Cocker, Alan got a phone call from his manager, who said that Yes wanted him to join the band. His current tour was ending, so he flew back to England for a meeting with John Anderson and Chris Squire, who told him he was joining Yes, or they were going to throw me out the third-story window, recalls Alan. 3 days later, on June 30th, Yes, along with their new drummer, opened their U.S. tour before 15,000 adoring fans in Dallas, Texas. Alan and Yes gave each other 3 months to see if it would work out, and more than 30 years later, Alan is an integral part of the band, having played on every Yes studio and live album recorded since. Founded in 1968 by Chris Squire and John Anderson, Grammy Award-winning recording artists Yes have created some of the most important and influential music in rock history, such as iconic pieces Roundabout, Close to the Edge, I've Seen All Good People, Owner of a Lonely Heart, Starship Trooper, and countless others. His albums including Fragile, Close to the Edge, Tales from Topographic Oceans, my favorite, Relayer, Going for the One, and 90125 have been certified multi-platinum, double platinum, platinum, and have sold over 50 million records total in its career that has so far spanned almost five decades. Among the world's most influential, groundbreaking, and respected progressive rock bands, Yes continues creating masterful music that inspires musicians, fans, music lovers around the world. Time off from the Yes hectic touring and recording schedule allows Alan to pursue other projects as well, with longtime friend and technical guru Wreak Havoc. He formed Crash and Bang to provide music for the entertainment industry, including video games and television shows. He also serves as a testing ground for new music hardware and software and new approaches to music and its psychological effects on the user, and an excuse to plug the wrong things together just to see what happens, adds Wreak. In 2005, Alan formed a new band aptly called White, who released their self-titled debut album in January of 2006. White performs regularly in the Seattle area when time permits. In recent years, Alan has performed with a variety of artists, including Spencer Davis, The Ventures, Charlie Daniels, and Eddie Money, to name just a few. In 2007, Alan played alongside the late Keith Emerson, Simon Kirk, and Yes Bass's Chris Squire at the Ahmed Erdogan Memorial Show as part of the opening act for Led Zeppelin. He also conducts numerous drum clinics around the country and around the world to encourage and teach other drummers. Alan and his wife Gigi are very active in the Seattle arts community, serving on the board of directors of Music Aid Northwest, Northwest Program for the Arts, and the Seattle Theater Group. Alan is also a member of the Seattle chapter of the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences. Yes will be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for the class of 2017, and it's about time. The induction following two previous nominations will occur 1 year shy of the legendary progressive rock band's 50th anniversary. Please welcome to the show legendary drummer for progressive rock royalty, Yes, Alan White. Hello, Alan.
How are you?
Did I cut it down enough, or should I have continued?
No, you know what? I said, okay, that's the interview's finished, right?
Nothing else to talk about, right?
Yeah. I said, okay. Well, where do you want to start? Where do you want to start in amongst all of that and get to the real detail?
The real detail, right? First of all, I want to say congratulations on being inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for the class of 2017.
Thank you very much. It's a great honor to be inducted. You know, as you say, you know, you've got to be 25 years in the making of music. And yes, it's been 25 years since then almost that we've been getting people, 90% of the people who come to shows get, I don't understand why you guys are not in the Hall of Fame. One of them being, I went to the inauguration, the inductee ceremony down in Los Angeles for Heart. They're friends of mine up here in Seattle.
Right, right.
And inducted were Rush, and I met some of the guys from Rush, and one of the guys from Rush came up to me and said, I can't understand how you guys are not in the Hall of Fame. And I said, nobody can, really. And he said, well, we just got into the Hall of Fame, and we modeled all of our music on you guys.
said, so I know.
Why you guys are not in there, I don't know. So,
yeah.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. I don't know. They got their own way of doing things. It seems like
it took quite a while for them to get into the thought of progressive music being in the Hall of Fame.
But my thinking is, I think it should all be under the rock and roll umbrella, but I thought they should probably divide it up into genre, like have progressive rock, that, you know, then have R&B, you know, that kind of thing. Because to me, that would make more
sense. Yeah, well, they've kind of done that to a degree. But now they got a mix of quite a few different styles in there, you know. But they date themselves back with some people because they're warranted from their period of time in music, which I don't, you know. It's good they do that to a degree, but they've got to recognize some of the bands that have been around for almost 50 years.
Exactly.
So, which they did this time.
Good, yeah. And you know, I had a talk with Greg Lake, you know. Greg, of course, Greg Lake just passed away. But you know, he was saying that, you know, he didn't know why progressive rock wasn't really identified like it should have been. You know, in my opinion, the Brits, developed the prog rock sound. And to me, that's just, you know, it's almost another, you know, world from rock and roll. It's
like a big circle, really, musically. But it did take them a while to realize that progressive rock was kind of very current back then. But it's also done a big circle, and it's kind of getting very current nowadays as well. So
there are a lot of new bands doing progressive rock now.
We got younger musicians, like teenagers. Mm-hmm. And early 20s that come to our shows to see how we did things in the old days, and also some of the more current music we're doing, because we always try and do things that are different and new and different ways and forms of playing your instrument and look into the future musically and creating new sounds in different areas. And we get a lot of young kids that come and watch us do that. Also, how to play Heart of the Sunrise, for instance, and songs like that from in the past.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can duplicate another relayer.
Oh, my God. We spent a long time working the bass and drum parts out for that. Chris and myself spent an awful long time working on how to weave our way through the music and make it different.
Yeah, that was my favorite album. Yeah.
For instance, there's songs like Sound Chaser and, and Gates of Delirium. I mean, those are classics. Rhythm section classics, as it were, you know, because it was very adventurous at that time.
The lineup that is going to be at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I understand it's going to be the Yes Union tour lineup. Is that true?
Well, we're trying to figure out how to do this because the current band, and obviously there's the other band that has John and Rick in it, and this one's got Steve and myself, and we're working out how to do that. But when you look at the list of nominees, and the people who are actually getting inducted, it is very much like the Union tour being on stage.
Yeah, it's tough because there have been, you know, so many changes, you know, over the last, you know, 5 years or so. But, you know, and I know, you know, I've had Billy Sherwood on this show, and he's contributed so much to the band, and, you know, it continues the wishes of Chris to, you know, carry on the tradition of the band and everything.
Absolutely, which is one thing, you know, when Chris was really sick and he really looked like he wasn't going to make it, you know, I had communication with him. And he said, whatever you do, I want you to keep the band going and keep the message of Yes alive like we started it. And, you know, I said, sure, you know, I certainly will.
I was very fortunate to talk to Chris. I think he was on holiday in Hawaii doing, you know, just kind of chilling out or something. But I had a great talk with Chris, really nice guy. And, you know, I from the beginning fell in love with, you know, Fish Out of Water, you know, his solo LP.
Yeah,
that was one of my favorite albums.
There's a song on there called Song of Seven. I really like that song.
Yeah. I was trying to talk him into doing another one, part two. He started laughing.
He's really lucky to do that for a long time. In fact, you know, he really had no interest. He just thought that was good. He'd rather concentrate on making and writing for Yes music.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm a big Yes fan from way back. I mean, I'm an original guy. You know, I'll be honest with you. When John left the band, I was kind of, you know, hurt. And I told Chris that, too.
Well, a lot of people were. It really kind of left us going, okay. And Rick Wakeman, and I was just, you know, I was doing another interview a little while ago, and he asked me about that period of drama and how that album came to fruition at that time. And I said, well, I said, you know, I made a phone call. It was in London. There was a studio we used to rehearse in called Redan in London. Mm-hmm. And I said, look, I called up Steve and I called up Chris. And I said, look, I booked the studio for Monday morning. Whoever turns up is in Yes.
Really? I didn't know that.
So Chris and myself and Steve turned up, and we just started writing music, and that was what was the foundation of kind of drama and all of that stuff. And then Jeff Downs and Trevor Horn were rehearsing in the room next to us, but they were totally Yes fans. So Trevor kept popping his head in. He said, I've written a song for you guys if you want to hear it. Next thing, you know, in a couple of days, all of their equipment was out in our room, and that was the form of the next Yes, the drama.
How about that? Yeah, I didn't know that.
That's funny. The way it happens in the music business.
I guess so.
And then we actually went on tour after the album got released, and it got a great reception in America. But then all of a sudden we're playing three sold-out nights at Madison Square Gardens. You couldn't understand the change, you know.
Well, Yes will never lose their impact at all. I mean, you guys will always draw fans no matter where you are. I mean, you guys could be 80, 90 years old, you'll still draw fans.
Well, that's another question I just answered this morning, actually, on another interview. He said, will there ever be a time where they're playing Yes music on the radio and nobody's actually, who was in the band originally or through the 70s and 80s and 90s, is actually still in the band anymore.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
they're touring. And I said, well, that's a possibility. But I said, a lot of people quote like albums like Topographic Oceans, mm-hmm, which is what we're playing on tour right now, side one and side four, as classical pieces of music nowadays. And it's kind of collector's album. And quite frankly, people keep saying, well, they're going to be playing this forever because it's kind of like classical music, like Mozart or something.
I was just going to say that.
It'll be playing when all of you guys are on the ground, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's going to be considered like a classical piece, like you said, like Beethoven, you know.
Yeah, well, it took long enough to write and rehearse as what it did for Beethoven. So,
well,
put a lot of thought into detail in music, and it takes a long time to get it right and get the sound right and make it just perfect, which you did with Topographic.
Well, you guys are geniuses. I've always said that, and I always thought you guys might have been from another planet. I told Chris that.
You thought we were from another planet?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I've got to tell you about that. There's a good answer for it, but I can't tell you what it is.
If possible, if you can ask Patrick Mraz to be at the, because you know he really deserves it for just being on Relayer. Because that to me, that I love that lineup.
Well, you know, there's quite a lot of people that. I mean, we've had quite a few keyboard players in Yes over the years.
Yeah.
And, you know, quite frankly, including all those keyboard players and you know, taking the band from the Trevor Raymond era and stuff, quite frankly, I kept answering people's questions. Like, look, I'm going to put all the people that have been on Yes on stage. And I said, well, if they've got a stage big enough, because... I said, there's so many people doing Yes, it could be hordes of people up there.
Yeah,
so,
I'd like to see it happen, though.
Yeah, well, that would be a lot of work, to say the least. And I'm sure the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame people and the TV people might have something to say about that.
I'm friends with Patrick. Patrick, you know, he lives here in Florida, not too far from me, really, and we've had him on the show.
And, actually, I don't know if he's coming on this cruise we're doing in a couple of weeks.
He is. He's going to be there. He will be there,
okay, that's cool. I enjoyed talking to Patrick. And, you know, he's a funny, but he's a great guy to be around, you know. he's just funny.
He is funny. He's a good guy.
And he's been Yes for that whole... you know, period of Yes, which was a great period that lasted about a year, I think.
Well, when you had that lineup during Relayer, I saw you guys. You played RFK Stadium in D.C. You played Philadelphia. I mean, you guys were drawing 50,000-60,000 people at that time.
Yeah, well, we were drawing pretty big people. Then we did that. Well, in 76, I think it was, we did that Peter Frampton tour.
Gary Wright,
well, I also knew Gary very well. I played on three of Gary Wright's first albums.
Yep.
So there was all kinds of incestuous rock and roll stuff going on around that time.
I want to mention, you guys are going to hit the road again in February. You're going to go back on the road to continue the Tales from Topographic Oceans Drama USA Tour. And
yes,
I wanted to name a couple of dates. February 3rd, you'll be at Harrah's in North Carolina, Event Center Cherokee.
That's right, yeah.
And then you got the Cruise to the Edge, February 7th through 11th. That's going to be awesome. Yeah. You guys do this every year. And the lineup is incredible. Then you'll be here close to home here at the Mahaffey Theater in St. Pete. I'm in. I'm actually in Sarasota. So St. Pete is like 15-20 minutes. Yeah,
I'm going to shock you for a while here because in Sarasota, you know who lives in Sarasota now?
Who?
Eddie Offit.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I didn't
until about a year ago, and then we met. He was selling his sailboat. We met to a mutual friend who was buying it. It was pretty weird. So I went to see him, and he came to the show. He's great as usual.
But, I didn't know that.
Okay, carry on. Carry on.
Okay. Yeah, Brian Johnson has a house here also in Sarasota. Then you'll be at the Pompano Beach Amphitheater, again in Florida, Pompano Beach. That's February 12th. Back in Atlanta Symphony Hall in Georgia, February 14th. Back in Florida at the Florida Theater, Jacksonville, February 15th. Another casino on February 17th in Biloxi. The Casino Resort and Spa in Biloxi, Mississippi. The Strand Theater in Shreveport, Louisiana on the 18th. Majestic Theater in Dallas on the 19th. And you'll be in Texas at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center in Midland, Texas on February 20th. So you got
some great dates coming up. Yeah, it's good. We're finding warm weather, too.
back to warm weather, right.
Yeah.
You got your 50th anniversary coming up. I think it's next year, right?
Yeah, I believe so, which is kind of scary. But, in July, I will have been in the band 45 years, which is another scary point. But it's actually great. It's still feels the same. The band is great.
It's amazing. You guys got to plan something for that 50th anniversary, something really, unique.
There's lots of rumors going around, but we have to finalize a lot of them. That's as far as I can tell you.
No scoops today, huh?
No. Sorry about that.
I'm hoping for another union tour.
I'm not saying nothing.
Yeah, you're not saying nothing, right? Well, we've talked about Yes. I mean, your credentials even before Yes were amazing. I got to ask you to talk about getting that phone call from John Lennon, because you really thought it wasn't real when he gave you a call to join the band.
Yeah, well, I thought it was one of my friends, and I was cooking Sunday lunch or something like that in the kitchen when I got the call, something of that nature. And I thought it was a friend. I said, come on, stop joking around with me, and put the phone down. And then I got a call back about 10 minutes later, said, no, this really is Jonah, at which I stopped cooking. and he sat down on the chair, and I went, really? He said, look, I saw you playing last night in the club. I couldn't stay, but I got somebody to find out your number and all this stuff. He said, I'm just giving you a call to see if you want to play a gig in Canada. And I went, sure, absolutely, no problem. I was only 20 at the time, and I just really thought, all of that period in my life, going to rehearsals on the plane, I walked into the lounge in London Heathrow Airport, I walked into private people where they put people like John Lennon, and walked into the room, and there's John and Yoko sitting on the couch, and said hi, and then he said, oh, I forgot to tell you, at that time Eric Clapton came out of the bathroom, and he said, I forgot to tell you, Eric's playing guitar. So I went, oh, Eric Clapton as well. Okay, that's good. And then Klaus Luhmann came in, they said, well, we haven't time to rehearse things, but we're going to rehearse on the plane. And I just had a set of drumsticks played on the back of the plane seat, and they had a couple of acoustic guitars, and that's all we did. And then I remember one thing. he said on the plane that really stuck in my mind from back then. He said, "We're doing and one for the money." But he said, "No, we're doing the Carl Perkins version. Mm-hmm. It's got an extra beat," and he was really, really concerned everybody got that right. It's so good, which means that I got a warrant for the money.
Yeah.
Next and stop in it. And I went, okay, that's pretty easy. So, you know, it was good from then on. And I thought, well, this is great. You know, we get there, and then there's a convoy of limos from the airport. We get there, and I walk into the stadium, and Little Richard was playing on stage, and I went, wow, this is so cool. And then I went backstage, and I ran into Gene Vincent.
Gene Vincent,
That's a really old name to country with. And he was talking to John and all this kind of stuff. And then next thing we know, we're on stage.
Wow.
And I there was no drum kit. And they put a drum stool down, and I just sat on it, and they built a drum kit around me.
Really?
While I was sat there. And then it was 1, 2, 3, 4, here we go.
Just like that,
it was, just like that. All one in a row. Boom, 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 boom. Which is quite similar to the way I joined Yes. So I only had 3 days to rehearse the whole repertoire. So
all
of these things came quick and fast, and you have to adapt really quickly.
Then you got on the Imagine album. You met George. You got on All Things Must Pass. You're on My Sweet Lord, and
they opened the doorways to me playing on a lot of classic songs.
Yeah.
And, she'll never forgive that period. It was a great period in my life. But, you know, I was really young back then, and I didn't realize I was doing what I was doing. And then 10 years later, I turned around and went, wow, did I do all that stuff?
That is amazing.
It's scary. I thought it was a natural progression in the rock and roll business at that time.
Yeah. I've always thought of you, though, as a special drummer, you know, because of your resume before Yes. And I think most people did. You know, they knew you were a special drummer even before you even got into the band Yes. So, I mean, you did so much, you know. You did a lot of sessions.
The really memorable things, I spent about 5 months with Joe Cocker on the road in Europe, which was playing with two drummers, with Jim Keltner and myself. It was a really, really, really great experience. Jim Keltner is great. He taught me how to play with two drummers on stage and be very, very forgiving in music. So, you know, letting the other person have their bit and, you know, obviously sharing the spot with them.
I chatted with Michael Pinder and Joey Mullen, who were also on that Imagine album. They did a few things on the Imagine album as well. Two nice guys. You know, I think I've interviewed all of the Moody Blues guys, all Emerson, Lake and Palmer, almost all of Yes. I still need Steve. I still need Steve Howe. Tell him I'm after him.
Oh, really?
He's the only one left.
Well, Steve's a hard cookie to nail down.
He's a hard guy to nail down, right?
but he does great interviews. So I'll just warn you about that. Sure. Awesome. He's very aware of everything he's done as well. And he's been in Yes, a year longer than, no, actually 2 years longer than I have. And Rick Wakeman was a year longer than me.
Yeah.
It went in progression for the first 2 or 3 days. Bill Bruford left, and then Steve joined, and then Rick joined, and then Bill Bruford left, and that's when I came in.
And you came in,
I talked to Bill the other day, actually.
Oh, did you?
He's great. Because he's coming to the award center, and I said, tell me how we're going to do this, drama-wise. And he did mention to me, he said, I haven't played the drums in yonks. And I said, can you do all the songs? And I said, of course I can. But you know, I'm sure somebody would like to see if they say, I just want to stand in the back and play a tambourine or something.
So. He's kind of retired, isn't he, Bill?
He retired about 8 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
And he went to university to study music for a while, I believe.
Right.
And I just read in Wikipedia he's got his own record label now.
Oh, great.
So.
Speaking of speaking of record labels and recording, I'm friends with Scott Shore, you know, from Lazy Bones Recording. And I interviewed Tony Levin, and I reviewed that album, the Levin Torn White album. It was a great album.
That's
I really enjoyed it.
That's some crazy stuff.
It is.
It's pretty out there, some of that music. And well, I appreciate the fact somebody appreciates it because it's so left field, some of that stuff, and pretty crazy. I enjoy actually listening to it myself, and it was great making it.
It had to have been a fun album to make, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I live in Seattle here, and Tony was here last week playing. We hung out for quite a while and watched the show with his Stickmen.
Yeah, the Stickmen, yeah. The Chapman.
And they'll actually be on the cruise, too.
That's right.
Yeah.
I went on your Facebook, and I saw a video of you with the Blue Angels, man. That was awesome.
Oh, is that still on there? Oh,
it's still on there. What was it like? I mean, you
did
great.
It's funny when they did that. I looked at it myself, and I was getting more sick watching me on the video than I was when I was doing it. And then I got down, the pilot, who was actually from Seattle here, who took me up, and he said, you know, I took Tom Cruise up to learn how to fly jets and stuff, or have the experience of it for Top Gun,
right?
The movie. And he said he threw up from word go, and you never threw up at all. He said, but you almost passed out when you pulled about 7 G's because you see this gray tunnel in front of you.
Wow.
And there's a dot at the end of the tunnel. If you make it to the dot, you know you've passed out. But
wow.
I fought it like hell, you know. It's really scary experience, but at the same time, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, you wrote the comment, or somebody wrote the comment that you did not get sick, and it seemed like you had your head the whole way. You're in good shape.
No, I was pretty aware for most of the flight, including when he flew about 20 foot off the ground on the runway. He said, okay, I've got to tell you, we're going for a special takeoff. And I go, what do you mean, special takeoff? And after he said, special takeoff, immediately the plane went straight up in the air about 10,000 feet. And I went, oh, my gosh, this is incredible. It's like the best roller coaster ride in the world.
Hmm. Did he do any nosedives?
Oh, he did one of those rollover, they call it, and you get weightless at the top, and he's floating around, and then as he comes down and pulls out of it, you hit about 7 G's. That's when your face goes like you look like something out of a horror movie.
Now, are you a pilot as well? Do you fly planes?
Well, I learned to fly when I was about 23. I started the lessons, and I got my pilot's license in England, but I was on the road so much that I didn't have time to keep up all my hours and all that kind of stuff. But
right.
It's like riding a bicycle. If you get back in a cockpit, you really feel like you know what to do again, which is, you know, if all else fails and everybody else on a jumbo jet falls asleep except you, passes out, I'll sit there and I'll try and land it. I got the feel for it.
I wouldn't want to be in that position, though.
Well, it would be kind of scary, but I'm sure they talk you through it nowadays.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I took lessons, and I flew, you know, like the Cessnas, like the 172s, and I forgot all the other ones I flew in, but they were 1970s planes, and they were, you know, the seats were coming out, and, you know.
Yeah, I know. They were old planes. And then I also... my first solo flight I ever did after 8 hours of training. I did 8 hours training. That's when you're eligible for a solo flight. I went up.
After eight hours? Wow.
Yeah, I only had 8 hours training. And they sent me up there. They said, this won't be a big problem. You've never done this before, but they want you to land on a grass airstrip.
Mm-hmm.
And I landed on this grass airstrip. I tell you, it was so bumpy, and I thought I'd really goofed or something. But he said, no, he said, you look fine.
Did you do your night flying? You remember your first night flying?
I did my night flying with a mask over your face and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They put a head mask on. You can't see anything
right.
But the instruments.
Oh,
yeah,
did you get instrument training as well?
Yeah, I got all the way up to going into a double engine kind of category.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
You go into twin engines.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a couple of flights where he let me take over, but I never actually went through the training for it.
Alan, you could have saved the band a lot of money by just flying the plane. I mean, you know, you could...
Well, you know, I wouldn't go that far. Steve Howe would have a baby.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a great flyer. But,
yeah.
You know, at the same time, I learned that the reason I learned my flying because I thought if everybody else falls asleep on the plane, I'll damn try and land this thing.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. There's so many good pilots that were going down when I was taking lessons, and my wife kind of told me, "Are you sure you want to continue doing this?" You know.
Yeah.
You know?
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. There's always a risk. How's your back doing, by the way?
No, my back's it's a lot better than it was. I had back surgery, and it takes a long time to get over it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's healing. I get the occasional flinch in my leg, but playing the drums, I've got no problem at all. It's a little, when you do the walking thing, you feel it a bit, especially when you first get up and start moving, and then it kind of goes away.
Yeah. You tried everything, right? You went through the shots, the spinal shots and all that, and it didn't...
I actually had one of those a few weeks ago, and it did help a lot. And they
right.
said if you really feel like you need another one, come back in 2 or 3 weeks, and we'll give you another one. But you're only allowed a certain amount of those. Yeah.
That's right. I went through that, and they couldn't... You had to wait a while before they give you another shot. I had the disc problem as well, but I didn't
need surgery, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're putting those steroids right into your nervous system for your legs. You know.
That's right.
So,
Alan,
one of the things.
Anything else you'd like to promote? We got the tour coming up again in February. Any solo projects, collaborations, anything else?
You mentioned Music Aid Northwest. I'm actually doing a show here in Seattle.
Okay.
It's called Play It Forward. We do it every year with this, earning money for children in school, by
right.
schools instruments. We've had it for about 8 years now, 8 or 9
mm-hmm.
years. And anyhow, we made an awful lot of money. We had a license plate that was made called Music Matters. And
mm-hmm.
you can buy
right.
the license plate. You pay about $20-$30 on top of the regular price, and that goes towards the schools. It's a no-brainer, really. And it's doing really, really well. We've made an awful lot of money for the school system in the state of Washington.
Is that a license plate that it doesn't have Washington State on it? Is that just a generic plate that says Music Matters on it, or... Because I'd like to have one of those.
It's Music Matters, but it is a license plate in the state of
Washington. Oh, okay, I got you.
Yeah. Well, you can buy one and just hang it on the wall.
Yeah, that's true. I'll do that then. That'll be pretty cool.
Well, we're doing this show called Play It Forward at the Triple Door here. It's a really nice dinner club kind of
uh-huh.
thing. On March 25th, and my band's going to kind of headline it, the White Band, and then there's a few other artists kind of fun. It's a cool evening, and all the money goes towards charity.
Oh, awesome.
It'll be very cool.
Who's in the white band? Who are some of the other musicians?
A guy called Steve Boyce. He's the bass player.
Okay.
And he's very good. I've played with him for years. And the keyboard player is Jonathan Sindelman. Mm-hmm. He lives down in L.A., and he's playing in a band now that does kind of it's a Zappa tribute band that's really good.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. The singer's a girl called Robin, and she's got a voice that sounds like John Anderson.
You're kidding me. That's funny. That's funny.
No, she sounds exactly like him. It's like pretty scary. She was in this tribute band around here called Parallels.
Yeah.
And I went to see them, and she was just blew me away how much she sounded like John Anderson. It was amazing. And they do obviously a lot of Yes songs, and so we do songs off of 90125 and a bunch of different stuff from Yes. We do Roundabout, and we do Changes. You know, Owner of a Lonely Heart.
Yep.
And then we actually did Ritual at one time for
really?
A charity show. Yeah, my band played it pretty good.
Is the white band on YouTube? Can I go to YouTube?
Yeah, it is. Just go to go to YouTube and put my name in the white band. White. If you put white in there, it'll come up with a few different videos. It's got one of us playing in the park somewhere, playing Changes.
Oh, great. What about, do you have children, grandkids?
Yeah, I've got two children. They're pretty grown up. You know, my son is 33 now.
Right.
And to him and his wife, I have a 2.5-year-old, and they just had a baby about 2 months ago. So,
congratulations.
Yeah, a girl and a boy. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
The first one was a boy, the second one was a girl. So in England, we call that a king's pair.
King's pair, I like that. any drummers in the family yet?
Any what?
Any drummers?
Yeah, my son actually was playing in the school jazz band when he was growing up, but the technology took him over. Bought him a computer when he was about 8 years old.
Right.
And when he was 10, he was writing his own cartoons, and he's a natural. And now, you know, we'd go to a bookstore and stuff like that, and he'd be looking at books on Java and how to put the information in the computer when other kids were looking at, like, you know, the books you had to read for school and stuff like that. I said, you got to, you know, get all those mandatory books at school. He'd be teaching himself how to write computer language. So now, of course, he's got, he works for a huge company and designs apps, and he's also starting his own company. So he's doing real well.
Well, is he local also? Is he in Washington?
No, he lives in Denver.
Oh, in Denver. I was going to say Washington's the place for, you know, developing apps and computer stuff.
Well, you know, it's one of the places is up here. Microsoft's here where I live.
Right.
And the Silicon Valley down there, which was around for a long time. But Denver is becoming the new Silicon Valley from what we can understand. And he moved there about 5 years ago. And kind of got in on it really early. So. Anyhow, he's doing real well. And my daughter lives in Seattle. There's only 15 months between them. She's 32. And she's great. She's a nurse at the Seattle Children's Hospital.
Oh, great. Yeah.
She's a head nurse down there. She deals with the cancer ward for kids. It's a pretty hard job, but she kind of likes it, and she's used to it. So
Good for her. We need more nurses.
Yeah, it's a great, you know, actually recently she's just wonderful. She's been playing the drums and stuff like that, and doing tambourines and stuff like that. So he's doing well.
My wife's a nurse as well. She's been a nurse for, I don't know, 35 years or so. So
They work hard.
Yes, they
hard.
Do.
Yeah, and different long hours and stuff
yeah.
like that. They deserve every penny they get.
They work a lot harder than the doctors. If it was up to me, I'd give all the nurses free health care because they deserve it. You know that?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. They work really, really hard.
Yeah.
And, they get a lot of recognition for doing what their work with the cancer and
yep.
and providing treatments and being looking for the cure for cancer and all that
Excellent.
Kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, tell her thank you for her service. She's doing great. She's doing wonderful.
Yeah. She's a wonderful woman. Yeah.
Alan, I know you have to go. I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, especially for all the great music you've given us, man, throughout the years. And you continue.
Hey, well, it's been a lot of pleasure making music. Good to talk to you guys.
And again, congratulations on being inducted. And we're looking forward to it in the spring, right? That's when it's going to be?
Actually, it's April 7th.
April 7th.
In Brooklyn somewhere.
Oh, in Brooklyn. Okay. Probably... I wonder where is the venue.
It's theater, opera, arena type place. It's called. I'm sure if you Google it, you'll find out where it is. Yeah.
I'll find it. Thank you, Alan. I appreciate
it. All right.
Man.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate it, too. Thanks.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. For additional information about Yes and Alan White, visit www.alanwhite.net. www.yesworld.com, www.facebook.com/yesTheBand, twitter.com/yesOfficial, and you can also go on YouTube, www.youtube.com/user/yesOfficial. They're also on Instagram, www.instagram.com/yesOfficial, and soundcloud.com/yesOfficial. Also visit www.cruisetotheedge.com to see if there's any reservations left for the big Cruise to the Edge cruise that's coming up here very, very shortly. Fantastic acts on that, including Yes. I believe Steve Hackett from Genesis is on there, Patrick Mraz, and... Tony Levin, it's go to the website and you will be amazed. Very special thanks to Barry Lieberman and Mitch Snyder from MSOPR for setting up this interview with Alan White, and to the wonderful Doug and Don Newsom with BBS Radio for making it all happen every show. Please join me biweekly Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on the Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on the Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. And please, please don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., and it's available now at Amazon.com, and I promise you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on PBS Radio Station 1.